Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world, college football fans of games played in baseball stadiums across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May along with Matt Wilhelm. Matt, Ohio State's running pell-mell into the latter part of its season now, and look up, they're hoping to hit some home runs this week when they play at Wrigley Field, when they play against Northwestern and reshaped Wrigley Field. But just what's your take right now, man, on Ohio State and the momentum it has built over the last several games?
I think it's fantastic, and I think they followed suit to what our outward, whether it's fan, alumni, or reporting expectations have been. I think that taking care of business at home against Purdue was something nobody was scared of, although we probably got Purdue's best shot. But you look ahead to a unique circumstance, I would say, as you kind of made the baseball analogy to. Traveling not too far to Northwestern, who's kind of been an up and down football team, has no home stadium because it's now, it's rubble and being rebuilt. We don't have to play on the little, scaffold constructed
Scaffolding.
stadium right down there by the water, but we're going to have a really, really cool venue. And I think that, that the city of Chicago, Northwestern, and I'll say football fans throughout the greater Chicago area will likely turn out because of A, it's the Ohio State Buckeyes. B, it's at, an iconic venue like Wrigley Field. And as we talked before jumping on air, I was I guess unlucky enough to play most of my home games in my entire National Football League career in baseball hybrid football stadium. So Jack Murphy or Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego was home of the Padres and the Chargers for many years. So I was lucky enough to have, baseball dirt scars on my elbows and knees for the first couple of games of the season. Then we would always actually play like a home and home. That last fourth preseason game would always be close travel. So the Chargers would go up to San Francisco to play the Niners at Candlestick, or the Niners would come down and play us. And then I was lucky enough to be a 49er and play at Candlestick and have home games there. Then my last baseball experience was playing the Raiders. When the Raiders were still, playing in the Coliseum in Oakland, it was O.co Stadium, I believe, at that point. And I'll talk a little bit about it. It's weird because these are truly baseball stadiums with a football field on them. So it's going to be a lot like Wrigley. And it's, there's they try to fill in the voids to kind of bring the angular kind of first or third baseline, which are sometimes so wide. In with manufactured or created seating or floor seating or they're all a little unique. They're all a little weird. There's some funky little corners with the football field being 120 yards where you're kind of gonna maybe the end zone's gonna butt right up against the ivy where you catch a touchdown or a pass defensed in the corner of the end zone and you're gonna be 10, 15 feet from the home run wall covered in ivy there at Wrigley Field. So it's extremely unique. What's great is, as I just rattled off, my experience playing in a baseball stadium, for our Buckeyes and for these Northwestern players that are probably going to get to do it, a few times over the next year or two, it's a memory maker for sure.
And by the way, I was so eager to get to this edition of this show that I forgot to say it's the Tim May Show starring Matt Wilhelm. But that's what it is, ladies and gentlemen, in case you just tuned in. The Tim May Show starring Matt Wilhelm. And by the way, I'm going to have Andy Backstrom on from LettermanRow.com, good friend of mine. Gotten to know him over the last couple of years since he joined us. Before that, he covered Boston College and had the experience of covering Boston College playing in Fenway Park and
Yeah.
also at Yankee Stadium, I think in a bowl
Subway
game.
Series. Yeah,
So,
sure.
no iconic venues ever. And, I grew up, grew up. I covered the Browns and the Bengals way back when in the late 70s, early 80s. And of course, the Bengals played in Riverfront Stadium. The Browns played them in the old, I called it decrepit because I never saw Cleveland Stadium as a romantic football
No.
venue like a lot of people have, or baseball venue for that matter. But covered all those games up through 83 before I started covering Ohio State. And of course, Ohio State played there way back when against Northwestern, ironically. And then Ohio State played in the new Brown Stadium against Toledo many years ago. I think Dane Sonsenmaker was still playing then. But the point is, these baseball turned football stadium venues are kind of cool, but playing on them every day, let's get back to that, Matt, before we
Sure.
but really break down. There ain't much to break down about Ohio State Purdue. Like I've
No.
always said, you can't spell Purdue without the PU. And that's kind of the way it turned out on Saturday. But before we break down kind of going into this game against Northwestern, what Ohio State needs to improve on, et cetera. But let's get back to playing on those kind of surfaces. Here's what I remember when I used to go to Houston Oiler games and some Houston Cougar games in the Astrodome. And the Astrodome had those seats that turned so that it would make it into a football stadium. It was actually, that was back in the era of the multi-purpose stadiums when everybody was trying to save money and only have one stadium downtown, like Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, et cetera. I mean, we could name a million of them. You played in one, Jack Murphy Stadium. I think the seats moved there too. Am I wrong about that? But
No, they did. Yeah, they're on like some type of roller system. Yes. And what's unique about these is, as I said, they're constructed in some cases to attempt to be hybrid, but they're predominantly baseball stadiums. So the angles, they do their best with moving seats. The angles are all going to be, focused on a baseball diamond, if you will. And then they try to do their very best to shift or rotate and then fill in everything they can to, create, seats in those voids. The one thing that's a little unique about them in general is there's a non-football stadium energy about a baseball stadium where
Explain.
it's like, and I mean, I am gonna, it's like, so like the noise, as you're accustomed to playing in a football stadium, it comes from a very, yeah, like outward, inward, towards the field, because they're all usually horseshoe shaped or, dual sides like a V with, an end cap. So it's all kind of
Arena.
encapsulated, where because of the baseball construction, there'll be sound voids in a football season or for a football stadium or a football field. And I also think like there's going to be portions where they don't fill in with seats, certain areas, and the fans will be very far from a specific, can I say, corner or yard line of the football field just because of the setup. And so it's just going to be weird. And I think that's like, I'll say from a football standpoint, like, where are the play clocks? Where is the time clock? You're really gonna have to get for our players who've not done this, and I think Northwestern, this is their first game at Wrigley. It's they're all gonna have to go out for that like pre walkthrough, and maybe when we get into town on Saturday, I wouldn't be surprised if Ryan Day takes the players over there and do kind of like a team walk
You meant
of,
Friday.
Correct. Yes, I'm sorry. My clock's right. I'm working a high school
I
running
know you're
down
right.
a college and a pro. And so it's, you get in, you kind of like, where do the buses park? Everybody meanders into the locker room. Okay, where's my locker? Where's my stuff? Also from a Buckeye standpoint, all the players, at least I used to love to do it. I used to love to go see my game helmet and see how many Buckeyes I got awarded after last week's game. Oh, I went from 37 to 50. I must have played really good, and then you, of course, kind of part of your itinerary is to make your way out on the football field. You'll have 10 or 15 minutes to kind of walk around. And then coach will naturally kind of pull you in, start pointing out, some of the differences of the arena, I guess you could say, or the field in this case, or stadium, of what the differences are. So the quarterback coach take the quarterback guys and kind of walk through some of the differences. Hey, what about this? What about that? I'm going to usually be right about here. Might be a little farther than you're accustomed to in certain situations. So, it's fun. It's different. And I think, like anything for Ohio State, is getting off to a fast start in this neutral, kind of neutral site setting, because I do believe Buckeye fans will make their way into Chicago, in, a heavy dose. And because of this unique Wrigley Field setting, we'll want to enjoy it too, and hopefully come out with another Buckeye victory.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's gonna seat like 40, I think 48, 45, 48,000 people, maybe upwards of 50. We'll see. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's always been a heavy Ohio State crowd when it played at Deich Stadium and whatever other names that stadium had, which, wow, it had been needing to be replaced for a while, but not really, because the only time they ever filled it up was when Ohio State, Iowa Wisconsin or
Michigan,
Michigan
yeah.
came to town.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. And but I digress. This at Wrigley Field, it's got the field is laid out basically the south sideline. It's going to basically run east and west. The field is, which I'm not a big fan of east-west fields, but number two, the in essence, the foul line down the right field line is going to be, as you look at it from the what do you call it, the home plate end, the right the right field line and first baseline are going to be the in essence the sideline, you know, going
Yeah.
toward right field and right center field is the way the field is configured. It's already being painted as we
Well,
speak and
and
stuff.
one other thing that I just wanted to point out, and I know we briefly talked about it as well, is moving away from, you know, that mock-up stadium on Lake Michigan
Yeah.
further into the suburbs of, you know, the Chicagoland area, like that lake effect weather, if that's a thing, and I haven't looked at the forecast, you know, the wind. The sun, again, any, you know, if it's rain, if it's flurries, whatever, gosh, it's November. It could come and go the way that it seems nowadays and change very quickly. But you've moved now 15 to 30 minutes, or I'll say, you know, 15 to 20 miles away from Lake Michigan.
Well,
And
not that far. It's only a couple, maybe a mile and a half from Lake, but you're right. It's not on the lake. You know what I mean?
right. Yeah. So
Yeah.
the effect won't be as much from a weather standpoint.
True that. And you know, the last time Ohio State played up there, I know you probably remember this. They were in the middle of in essence, a Midwest hurricane. I mean, I think the
Yes.
wind was 40, 45 miles an hour. That's not hurricane strength. I know for all you nerds out there are gonna message me about that. But the bottom line is, it was a ridiculous day. It can't be any more ridiculous Saturday than it was that day. And when CJ Stroud and company pulled out what was a 21-7 win in 2022, I didn't get to make that trip as it turned out because I ended up testing positive for COVID earlier that week. But that's another story. But I wanted to ask you this, just the field itself, because like you played almost, you know, like you said, almost all your home games as an NFL player on that kind of field. Baseball fields not only look different, they're kind of built different from the standpoint of the infield area, especially, is pretty hard, right? I mean, it's pretty.
It is, and that's going to be. I was actually going to address it after I kind of made my weather comment. Is, you know, the turf itself, because that's the one thing that I think, like, you know, Northwestern. They might be. Are they turf now, or are they still natural grass, or were natural grass
we don't, wait a minute. Were you
at the old stadium?
Yeah, the old stadium was turf. I mean, it was actual grass.
Yes, naturally. So, and that's the one thing that Northwestern would actually, I think, in some cases, we actually thought as Buckeye football players, like they grew it a little long to slow down teams, right? Because they want to play a slower, more calculated level of football and take away your speed, you know, on a fast track, which is that low cut, well maintained, well manicured grass or
Rose
turf.
Bowl, yeah.
Exactly. And so, and now that this is going to be Wrigley, I mean, Wrigley Field is going to be grass as well. That's the other thing I'll say during team walk when you get in there is checking out, because you're now what, a couple of months removed from baseball season, at least Chicago Cubs baseball season, is are there seams that you need to worry about where they put down the sod, and how does that marry up with like the outfield, right? Or portions of the infield? Because there's going to be a lot of patchwork being done that coaches and players are going to be cognizant and leery of. There's just something to be said about, and I know that the NCAA, I'm sure, and the Big Ten has done their diligence to make sure that, you know, they're going to play on a surface that's approved. But that's just another factor of, you know, the guys are going to be playing on grass. They're so used to now in today's football playing on turf. Are they going to have to wear different cleats? You know, what does that look like? So that's just another level of playing in this like whole Wrigley Field unique circumstance. Mind you, the equipment staff at Ohio State, the coaches will be on buttoned up and on top of this to the point where the players can just go play. Don't get me wrong. But it's just something that you're going to have to like think about before you actually strap on and go out there, because of the unique circumstance.
You know what's really funny? This is how mature Jeremiah Smith is. You know, the freshman phenom wide receiver for Ohio State. He even brought that up on Saturday when we were talking to him after the game about getting a feel for the turf. You know, there is going to be important in essence, knowing which shoes to have on. You know, the length of cleats, whatever it is you need. But he was even thinking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. That's next level. I'm not sure you guys were in that in depth when you were in college. I may be wrong about that, but I don't want to short slight you, especially because you may catch me in a dark alley. But it is interesting that a freshman was actually had that on his brain, wasn't it?
It is, and I think it also just it's first of all, when it comes to Jeremiah Smith, it's no surprise
No.
because I think everything this young man is doing, both in his preparation and his performance, are all on a whole nother level that many folks have never seen before. And again, I think preparation is a key word when you kind of talk about Jeremiah Smith, because and that's something that both Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, and Brian Hartline have kind of lauded him for since arriving on campus, is just the business-like mentality that he takes towards everything. That's school, that's training, that's nutrition, that's game day performance, the recovery aspect. So it's really not a surprise. And I think it's, again, it's why he is performing the way he's performing. It's the reason why he's breaking the records at Ohio State, that he I think broke this past Saturday
Yeah.
against Purdue.
Chris
And
Carter.
so, and it's why he's just going to reset, those freshman record books, with what, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games still left to play.
See, that's the other thing he has in mind when you talk to him. He's thinking he's basically halfway through his season. I mean, that's how aware Ryan Day has made these guys of the goal. The goal is to win the Big Ten championship, get to the Big Ten championship game and win it. And then play in the college football playoff, the expanded college football playoff, which is at minimum a 16-game season, depending on whether you win that Big Ten championship game or not. If Ohio State gets there, could be 17 games. That's crazy, right? Thinking about
Yeah,
it.
Tim, what's actually, and I know that there's, where we stack on the college football playoff, that'll be what announced tomorrow. Is it
Yeah.
Tuesdays?
Well, as
Okay.
we record this, yeah, this comes out on Wednesday.
You're right.
But hey,
Correct.
but
So,
thanks for dating us. That's good.
yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So as it comes out, the what's interesting with us being number two essentially in the Big Ten, and being a 5 seed, and the path to, what would it be, playing Boise State. And
Yeah,
then I believe also
probably.
then potentially playing BYU, who would be the Big 12 winner and have that first round bye. It'd be an interesting debate on whether Buckeye fans would rather have the first round bye and win the Big Ten, and then play a team that just won a football game,
Yeah.
to deserve to play Ohio State, or play Boise State and BYU. Not taking anything away from them, they're both having great seasons. They both pose different challenges. With their style of offense, with Boise wants to turn around, hand the ball off, play great defense. BYU wants to sling the ball, sling the rock around the yard, run with Q like Zach Wilson did back in the day, which was made him what, the number two pick in the NFL draft, and also play great defense. So it's something that makes college football very interesting. I think it's also the powers of the NCAA and the conference commissioners are patting themselves on the back for this expansion of A, the conferences, which I think makes it must-see TV each weekend. And then also every Tuesday, and the conference championships even more intriguing as the season goes on, because it's going to continue again what we saw 3 and 4 lose, and 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I think in 10 all jumped up one spot, and it's just very intriguing. I think the SEC and the Big Ten are setting themselves up for probably more so. The SEC has been much, with Ole Miss beating Georgia, and Bama beating LSU the way that they did, and now LSU with what, 3 losses, 2 losses,
Yes.
are out of the conversation.
Barring
So
calamity. Yeah.
yeah, but so like, what are they playing for? It's I think it's everything that the powers of college football wanted, and college football right now is delivering each weekend.
Yeah. Or did they want it? That's the depends on, I think it depends. Here's the interesting thing, Matt. We were talking about this before we started recording. I mean, if the season goes the way Ohio State wants it to here, the rest of the regular season, that means Ohio State wins this week against Northwestern, beats an unbeaten for the first time ever, a 10-0 Indiana. Indiana's off this week, beats an unbeaten Indiana, beats Michigan, and then gets a rematch with Oregon in the Big Ten championship game and beats Oregon. That would mean the Big Ten. Ohio State would win the bye, you know what I mean? The automatic
Yes.
bye in the college football playoff. But that would mean the Big Ten would have 4 one-loss teams. And how, you know, I mean, I don't think there's any question Indiana gets in the college football playoff with one loss if it's to Ohio State. You
I
understand what I'm
agree.
saying?
And I would
Wait a
also
minute,
say,
did you see this coming? Go ahead.
no, I did not. I would
Nobody
also
did.
say the one thing that's a big factor, and we saw this based on the way in which Ohio State lost on the road at Oregon, was the fall wasn't much of a fall because of how competitive that game was.
Right.
So the one factor, and I'm not discounting Indiana. I mean, Cignetti has done an amazing job, and you know they deserve this break. And I'm sure they're going to use it to an advantage to prepare for Ohio State and come into Columbus and expect to win that football
Oh
game,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
But like the way in which Indiana potentially loses to Ohio State, I think will also be a factor. You know, that if Ohio State plays the way that we think they can play against a very good Indiana team, and let's just say it's a 14-point or 17-point victory, kind of just, I don't want to say domination, but in the lead and in control most of the football game. Does Indiana, with that late loss, you know, using BCS structure and four-team college football playoff structure, with that late loss and the way in which they lose, and again, because it's the first year, we don't know, how does the committee interpret that?
Correct.
Along with how does Penn State continue to win? How does Georgia and Bama, you know, and Tennessee continue to win their football games? And who wins the SEC championship? And by how much?
Yeah.
Because if that's also a close game, it almost guarantees a multi-loss SEC football team a secured spot,
Yes.
right? And then
Yeah.
you look at the other conferences. You know, whom else? You know, does the Big 12 get one? You know, does the ACC get two? I know, you know, Clemson's making, you know, they're battling every weekend, but like if they run the table, they'd be I believe, a one loss
No, they're two
Clemson.
losses already. Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah.
they're two losses already. But you've got SMU, you know, making a case for
Yes.
themselves. So then it's also, yeah, okay, so a two loss Clemson, or if, you know, if Pitt potentially runs the table, that a two loss Pitt, you know, now ranked, you know, in the mid to low teens. It's again, it's all the intrigue, and I think it's what everybody, while the NFL is full of 2-8 football teams, college football is must watch TV each and every Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the other thing, playing off what you just that you just threw out there, the hypothesis you just threw out there. Let's say Indiana and Ohio State's a close game, and I think it has every chance to be. I mean,
I
Indiana
agree.
is quite sound when it comes to playing the game. I mean, do I think Ohio State will have the talent advantage? We'll talk about it a lot next week, but yes, absolutely. But still, when you're playing a team that's playing well together, look out. But here's what I was leading up to is there's a chance that, let's say Ohio State wins out, like I painted a minute ago. But do the other three Big Ten teams host, you know, in the first round of the expanded college football playoff? Three of the four, three, will they get three of the four host games? I mean, they've really got to look at that when with all three of the other teams have just one loss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's interesting. That's what's going to be interesting when it comes to the SEC. How do you meld these two-loss SEC teams into that bracket? And do they deserve to host when you're looking at three Big Ten teams, all with one loss each against quality opponents? I mean, you know, I think that's going to be the most intriguing thing.
I do too, and I think it has all to do with I'll say like strength of schedule.
Sure.
I would say your performance against ranked opponents, and were the victories blowouts, or was your loss or two by in hyper competitive games, a lot like the Ohio State, you know, Oregon game. And the other factor that a lot of people, and again, it is what it is. It's but like December football in the Midwest area. To host a home, again, for Happy Valley to host a home game, and Indiana potentially to host a home game, and Columbus to potentially host a home game, and these SEC football teams you're talking about with one or two losses, but a you know, high quality resume, or Notre Dame to host a game. Like, the
Yeah.
Midwest is going to be cold. It's going to be chilly. You know, you're going to face teams from the west side of the Mississippi River coming east to play us. You're going to force a lot of teams, you know, south of the Mason-Dixon line to have to come up north to have to play a home game. You know, so that's a lot of what's on the line too, is that travel, like rest, travel. It's not neutral site, at least not yet in that first round. There's things that are going to be some drastic advantages that will control, the favorites of, I'm not much of a bettor, but the betting lines on these games are going to be factors for who's going to be at home, their record at home, what opponent, their travel, the weather. Then you're going to dig, all of us are going to dig into like their past record and, in cold weather games and and using those things as an advantage. But it's definitely in play. And I think it's all, again, I'm saying it's ad nauseum, but it's all the intrigue of what this new 12 team setup represents.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm on record as saying, I'd much rather see Ohio State play in pristine conditions than in snow or something that they're not used to playing in either.
Well, the way that they're built, the way they've been built since Urban Meyer kind of took over this football team is a SEC type of football team in the South, predicated around speed and physicality.
True.
That is warm weather controlled environment, to a T, is what you want to showcase.
Yeah,
So
and
you're
I remember
correct.
how Gene Smith was booed off the stage, although he wasn't on a stage. He's made the comment about possibly playing that game at Lucas Oil Stadium. In fact, Ohio State ended up in that kind of situation. And I was all for that because I think I want to see these games. I don't want to see weather playing a factor one way or the other because, like I'm telling you, when it's snowing and blowing, that's not good for any team, And
No.
you know this, man, having played the National Football League. You played in San Diego, you guys would go north or something, maybe in December. Y'all were fired up to play that game and get back on the plane and fly back to your
Oh
real
yeah.
nice conditions, right?
Get your win, get your win and get warm.
I saw the Raiders beat. I was standing like like 25 yards on the sideline when the Raiders beat the Browns back in those minus 51 wind chill back in what was 1980, 81, 80, I think, season, and to secure that victory in the National Football League playoffs. I mean, it doesn't necessarily favor who you think it's going to favor. But
Right.
real quick before we move on to Andy Backstrom and come back to you for a short, well, on paper it's going to be short, but it probably won't be final. What did you get most out of watching Ohio State Purdue? What's the one thing that intrigued you from that game? Was it Ohio State experimenting with that? I would call it the wide tackle six, but it was the wide tackle three defense they threw out there for a little bit and then got back out of it. Didn't really work real well. Was it the way Cody Simon is playing on another level? I'm talking about from a defensive standpoint.
Sure.
What did you take? I mean, obviously a shutout's a shutout, even though Purdue missed a makeable field goal. But what was your big takeaway defensively from that game?
I think all in all, it's hard in some cases to maintain that goose egg. And I know sometimes you luck into them with a miss or a red zone turnover. I just love the, I think there's a suffocating aspect to this defense that's been kind of showing up a little bit more recently. And I think it has a lot to do with, the collaboration amongst the coaches and players about, what's working and what's not. Coach to coach, coaches then, implement it to the players say, yeah, we like that, and then it shows in their play, both in practice and in the games. And then you do more of that, right? And I mean, anytime you can have a goose egg and get a defensive score. And I think that was kind of truthfully like the as a game flow standpoint, like the backbreaker. I think we had just, I think it was what, 21 points in 4 minutes and 6 seconds or something like that. It was score, get the ball back, Tomoliau, knocks the ball out. Jack Sawyer picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown. And then, they get us that fake three and out, maybe six and out. And then we get the ball back, score again really fast. And it was just too much. I mean, Purdue's, it was a dress rehearsal for us. And I think it's also to your point about the wide look in the defensive front. It was the perfect opportunity to tinker with something that you might have worked on in practice against yourself and see it against another opponent. Does it mean you scrap it forever? No, but you probably back burner it because it just didn't hit or execute. It might be something you need to invest in. And who knows? It may have been something that a team earlier in the season had tinkered with against Indiana and had success, something that somebody had tinkered with against Michigan
Michigan.
or Oregon and had success. If you really feel like those are your next three or four opponents that you're going to play after Northwestern, so you might back burner it, but you got to see it. Now you get to tweak it. So coming out healthy, Coming out with some turnovers, a score on defense. The goose egg is, you know, great, and a great step. And I think also on third and fourth down, how great we were against Purdue. I think they were might have been 0 for, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Like 0-3 on fourth down and 0-8 on third down is a great sign and always a statistic I look at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's because he's a football guy, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Wilhelm's a football guy. Let's jump over to my buddy and Anders Backstrom, who is a football guy, but a reporter kind of guy, kind of like me. We're going to talk about his experience, what he thinks about the Buckeyes, but also of playing, of the Buckeyes playing in on a baseball field, so to speak, this coming week. Let's get to him, and we'll come back for more with Matt Wilhelm. As promised, ladies and gentlemen, as I was talking with Matt Wilhelm a second ago, here's Andy Backstrom, the most eligible bachelor in Central Ohio, part of the Letterman Row crew, and we're headed to Wrigley Field this weekend, Andy, to cover Ohio State at Northwestern. They've got looks like a fresh layer of sod laid over the Wrigley Field, the football field running basically east to west or west to east, depending on your perspective, along the right field line is the base of it. But, you know, I've got you on because you covered Boston College in another iteration of your life before you moved to Columbus, what, a couple of years ago, and you got to cover a couple of games on some famous baseball fields, Fenway Park and Yankee Stadium. And by the way, welcome back to the Tim May Show. I know this draws a pretty good female quotient of an audience when you're on here each time, but welcome back. But are you looking forward to seeing another game on a baseball field, a college football game on a baseball field?
Definitely looking forward to it. I also lived in Chicago for a bit when I did my master's program at Northwestern. So I spent a lot of time in Wrigleyville, downtown Chicago. So I've had this one circled on my calendar for sure. And it feels like it completes the trifecta of really the three most iconic baseball stadiums, Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, and Wrigley Field. So I'm really excited to get there. I'm excited to see what the press box is like, because that's always an interesting experience with these games. You know, really you're looking at it more north to south than east to west for the press box view, which is interesting. You get more of that all 22 view, I guess, if you're a football junkie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat. But in both the games that I've covered before on baseball fields, the weather has been funky, and I'm sure we can get into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you know, the last Ohio State game I covered that was used to be a baseball field, but now it's not, but where the Miami Dolphins play. I always forget the current name of the of that stadium, but it was a 2020 national championship game, and the press box was still the old baseball press box, even though the Marlins don't play there anymore. They play closer to downtown, which has turned into a white elephant to a certain extent but that's a story for another day. But, you know, the angle watching the game, the press box not only was it on the corner of the field, but low, which stinks. Almost said another word there, you know, and we were in cubicles. It was almost like you were in a house of mirrors because it was during COVID, and you couldn't see really anything. And then the TV replay, it was on, they had TV monitors, obviously, like they have in almost every modern press box now, but they were like 15 seconds behind the play. And it was like the weirdest game. Of course, Alabama eventually kicked Ohio State's rear end, Ohio State's COVID-infected rear end, thanks to Clemson. But it was not an enjoyable experience. The games I've covered, a couple of games I've covered down there in the Orange Bowl Stadium, and also when Ohio State played Miami down there back in Luke Fickell's year. But give me some of your experiences playing, number one, I mean, obviously Boston College playing in Fenway Park. That had to be cool, just mm-hmm. no matter where the press box was, right?
So cool. And I think what's interesting about it is that, you know, with Fenway Park, a lot of the seats, they're facing towards home plate. And so that doesn't really work out too well. It's great for the baseball configuration. And that stadium is very old and traditional and iconic. But for a football game, you know, there's a lot of backs being turned or, you know, necks being sore maybe the next day of having to turn a little bit. But it was really cool. It was a UConn-BC matchup. not the greatest game. BC won 39-16. That we had so many punts. I was working for the student newspaper at the time, and BC had just clinched bowl eligibility. So there was a lot of like really bad puns about like strike, being thrown or bowled in that sense. But it was a dominant game by AJ Dillon, the running back who now plays for the Green Bay Packers. And I guess fitting in a way, because he went to Green Bay after his time at BC to play in some more inclement weather. It was raining pretty much the whole game. There was wind, and it was a lot of the old kind of, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, just a lot of running the football. But it was a really just cool environment seeing the Green Monster, right? Just on the other side. And meanwhile, you're watching football happening, and it worked out better logistically than I thought. I think when these games happen, there's a lot of concern about like player safety, the fan experience, but it went really smoothly overall. And so I just remember, being down on the field before the game, because we usually get field access before these games. And it's one thing for a football stadium, for a baseball stadium to be down there, especially somewhere like Fenway Park. That's something I'll never forget.
One thing I'll never forget is one time I went to Fenway Park. It was the biggest traffic jam I was ever in. I said I'll never go back there again. I didn't take the train, so to speak, or whatever it is that goes near there. Just like Wrigley Field, you can stay right downtown Chicago and jump on the Red Line, and it has a drop off right there on the east side, as the east corner of Wrigley Field, and it's quite convenient for people who want to stay downtown and really enjoy the full Chicago experience. Tell me about Yankee Stadium. You covered what, the Pinstripe Bowl? It was Boston College versus whom, and what was that like? Because I think the weather was
Yeah.
pretty bad, right? You
Oh, it was
didn't
worse
wear
than it.
pinstripes that day. You wore the biggest coat you had, right? Go ahead.
Absolutely. And so that was worse weather than Fenway. And it was the same season, funny enough. So that was
Oh,
also
wow.
2017 season, which was a really weird season in Boston College lore. Not that we need to get into that, but basically they started 2-4. Steve Addazio, who was the head coach at the time, which people might know of because that was part of that Florida staff. He was there with Urban Meyer. But anyway, they started 2-4, thought he was gonna get fired. They go on a run. They win five of their next six games, get bowl eligibility. They end up in the Pinstripe Bowl against Iowa. So, some Big Ten flavor there. And so, Kirk Ferentz and the bunch go to New York City. Not that he's big, one big for the city outside of Iowa. But, the weather was awful. I think it was a kickoff temperature of 23 degrees. The wind chill made it feel like 12. And they have an open air press box. And it was definitely an interesting experience, me being. What was I then? I must have been 19 or 20 years old. I was like, I am just going to brave the elements and have this experience. Like, I'm not going to be one of the reporters. Several reporters just went inside and, we're kind of in the lounge area where they had the TVs up and it was warm and you could, cover the game kind of, but you'd be watching on TVs essentially. And I was like, that I can't do that. When's the next time I'm going to be in Yankee Stadium? So I was out there the whole time. My computer was fighting for its life, like going in and out, sometimes dying. The battery wasn't great. I was losing circulation in my hands too. So, but it was nothing compared to the players because they couldn't find footing. And I remember in the first quarter, they had to switch their shoes. They had to not wear cleats anymore and start wearing basketball shoes to find any kind of footing on what was basically ice, like a layer of ice. Down there in Yankee Stadium. And yeah, it was about a crowd of 37,000, if I remember correctly. But a lot of those ended up just hanging out in the concourse area where it was warmer. So during the second half, it was actually a pretty good game. It was tied 20-20 at one point late in the game, but a lot of people were just not in the seats because of how cold it was. Ultimately, Iowa won a game that it felt like no one wanted to win. There was a lot of just kind of miscues that maybe you wouldn't with. Without the elements, but Iowa ended up winning late in that game. And it was definitely another, it was another AJ Dillon performance for BC, another ground and pound effort, but some costly mistakes in there. But I just remember going to the post game press conference afterwards, and I couldn't feel my fingers. Like I probably had several typos in my story that I filed, that my editors back in at BC were trying to fumble through. And I remember getting to the Kirk Ferentz part of the press conference, which we all know how that goes. And just kind of a monologue sometimes that just keeps going and going and going. And by the end of it, my fingers finally thawed out.
Good.
But yeah, that was another memorable experience for
Yeah,
sure.
the last year of the old Michigan press box, it got so cold. It's just like, I don't. I think they turned off the heat, you know, because they had gotten whacked by Ohio State, and I think they turned off the heat. But I ended up writing one of my stories. I'm sitting in the restroom, the men's restroom, because I kept saying to myself, it's got to be warmer in here because they can't let the pipes freeze, right? And then I covered the Browns and the Bengals back in the late 70s, early 80s, and the old Cleveland Municipal Stadium that has such a warm spot in so many people's hearts, it doesn't in mine. I thought it was a dump, number one, and number two, the football press box was jammed up into the upper deck on the what would that have been, the south side of the stadium, and my seat was always on the very end, on the lower right, very end of the press box, and the forced air heater was right above my head, and it blew hot air that way and none that way. And I was always frozen. I would leave the press box early just so I could be close enough to the locker room when they opened the locker room because it was always warm. I mean, I have no fond memories. I covered the two of the coldest games in pro football history. The Browns getting beat by the Raiders on that interception late when Brian Sipes should have just thrown it away. And then the next year, covering the Bengals and the San Diego Chargers when it was minus 59 wind chill. It was minus 51 in Cleveland, minus 59. And that was in Old Riverfront Stadium, which was a multi-purpose, one of those multi-purpose mistakes everybody, all the major cities built. You remember Philadelphia with this
Yeah,
multi-purpose stadium that
I know.
everybody built. And it was not good for football or in my opinion, wasn't that great for football either, but it was so cold that day. I couldn't wait to get in my car and warm up. That's how cold I was. But the point is, if you just, this is a almost perfect time of the year to play one of these games. I keep reminding people, Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus played for the Chicago Bears at Wrigley Field. They didn't play at Soldier Field like everybody thinks they did. And this is the setting on Saturday. This is a setting where Gale Sayers scored then a record six touchdowns. I think it was against the San Francisco 49ers way back in what, 65, 1965 or something. And couldn't be stopped. The weather was awful. It rained. The sod was gone. It was just a big mud hole. And the Bears won like 61 to 20 or something, some kind of wild score. What do you think is going to happen on Saturday? Number one, I think the field conditions are going to be a lot better. It's not
Yeah.
going to be super bad weather. It's going to be in the 50s, it looks like. Maybe the high 40s when they kick off at 11 a.m. local time, 12 noon Columbus time. But what do you expect to experience there on Saturday?
Yeah, I feel like whatever the forecast is now, I feel like there'll definitely be some changes. Maybe not rain, but wind certainly. I mean, the last time I was at Northwestern for an Ohio State game, Tim, I believe you were sick with COVID at the
Yeah.
time. But it was 40 mile per hour winds, and CJ Stroud ran for more yards and he threw four in that game.
Yeah.
Ohio State won 21-7, but it was a little too close for comfort at times. So I wouldn't be surprised that there's wind. I don't think the score will be that close, but who knows? Northwestern does not look good this year. That being said, I think it's gonna be really interesting to see how many Ohio State fans pack in there, because even at Ryan Field, it was very scarlet and gray dominant. And you look at Wrigley Field, it's about 41,600 plus capacity for baseball games.
Yeah.
I'm expecting it to be an Ohio State friendly crowd for sure. And yeah, I mean, it's looked like I think they've had three college football games since 1938 at Wrigley Field. All of them have included Northwestern. They were there in 2010. They hosted Illinois. But actually, because at that time there were safety concerns, so
Yeah.
both teams were switching sides after every possession. I
Yeah.
remember watching that on TV. And so they were only scoring on one end zone. It was a 48-27 Illinois win. Then they did some renovations to make it a little bit more feasible, and they kind of repositioned the football field on the diamond. And so Northwestern played Purdue in 2021 and Iowa in 2023. They used
Yeah.
both ends. So they'll use both end zones this weekend. But Northwestern has still yet to win a game in Wrigley Field, even though they've had three tries and they have, I guess, had three strikes, if you will. They've struck out in those appearances. So they get another one this weekend, but it feels like it's going Ohio State's way.
Yeah, give me a fresh pitcher, give me a fresh batter in there. Yeah. Hey, do you expect, pardon my pun, real quick before we finish up here, Ohio State, the Ohio State football team hasn't really hit in the last many games, hasn't hit, have they hit a real home run? I'm trying to think, play wise, but we'll be using that pun. Do you think we'll be using that pun on Saturday? Do you think Ohio State has a chance of hitting a few home runs with its running game or passing game on Saturday?
I do, especially in the. I mean, if Travion Henderson runs what he did against Purdue this past weekend, he might have one. I feel like he's due
Yeah.
for one. He had a couple close ones. The Oregon game, it felt like he almost got there. Against Purdue, it felt like there was a couple times where he was one tackle away, one broken tackle away from breaking loose. So he'd be my pick for a home run in Wrigley Field. But I'm sure you'll be asking the players about that on Wednesday, Tim.
Of course. I mean, you don't want to swing and a miss. Last question for you. What do you think this Ohio State team needs to show this weekend before it really heads into the gauntlet, hosting Indiana and hosting Michigan? Because no matter what Michigan's plight is right now, the one way to find salvation in this season for Michigan would be to come in and upset a really good, maybe great Ohio State football team. But what do you think Ohio State needs to show against Northwestern? Obviously, last week was a show and tell, really against Purdue, because we saw some things we haven't seen all year or much of all year, right? And what do you think could be coming around the corner in Wrigley Field?
I think it's a game where you really want to dominate the line of scrimmage. I would get in there, run the football, and get out of there and create some havoc defensively. I think the most encouraging thing against Purdue was just the fact that you won in all three phases. You could point to special teams and you have some great plays there. The punt block is the one that comes to mind first, but overall, your best special teams game. You play well on offense. You don't turn the football over. You pass for 260 yards. You run for well over 150 yards, or you're at that mark. And then defensively, you haven't given up a touchdown. You've given up one touchdown, I guess, in the last three games. So you have to be pretty satisfied with the complete sheet there. And I think going into this game, you'd like to have, another one of those performances. And I think it's doable against a Northwestern team that's really struggled at times this year. So I would say run the football, control the line of scrimmage, and don't turn the ball over. And if you do all those three things, you'll feel pretty good going into a game against Indiana where you have to be on the ball. Like you said, Tim, like that's a legitimate top five matchup. They don't play this week. They're not going to really move in the rankings. So, it's probably going to be a number two versus a number four or five situation.
Sneaky Cignetti. Say that three times. I mean, he's gonna have something for the Buckeyes. Hey, one last thing. I always a bonus. One last thing with me. You know that, right? I mean, the end of the regular season, which includes the Big Ten championship game. If Ohio State wins out, you could have four Big Ten teams with one loss each. Not only will one have a bye, the champion would be Ohio State in that scenario. It does appear if things go according to Hoyle. Should the other three, I got Matt Wilhelm talking about this too, should the other three host in the first round of the first college football playoff if, in fact, you have three other Big Ten teams with one loss, which would be Oregon, Indiana, and Penn State?
It feels like that right now because that's the way they're coming in the rankings.
Yeah.
And, barring any kind of complete drop off, like if Indiana gets really beat bad by Ohio State and it's not even a game, maybe we have a different discussion about Indiana. I still think they would find their way in, but maybe their seeding looks a little bit different. And but as far as Oregon goes, they've been smooth sailing, really since early season hiccups and after the Ohio State game that no one's really touched them. And then Ohio State has looked pretty solid after the Oregon game, minus the scare against Nebraska.
Yeah.
And you gotta go down the line, and Penn State looked really good bouncing back from the loss against Ohio State. And
Yeah.
if they had any kind of offensive semblance and late in that game, maybe that game against Ohio State looked different. So yeah, I think all four of those teams, it's been shown in the AP poll, it's been shown in the college football playoff. The SEC this year seems to just be beating each other up. And you could argue, well, oh, the conference is better because they're all, just beating each other, and that's what it is. But it's sometimes really hard to know with the way some of those games are going, like the way Georgia isn't playing the defense it normally does, the way they're turning the ball over more than they normally do. Alabama has been up and down. It's just like you go across the conference, and it's harder to sell than the Big Ten, which is not anything that I predicted, certainly. And I don't know if anyone predicted this for the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, it's harder to sell for the SEC, but they'll figure out a way to sell it. I mean, that's the way it
Oh yeah,
works. But
they will.
it would be stunning if Indiana ends up undefeated, wins the Big Ten championship. Indiana is one of the four bye teams, along with possibly Colorado, and whomever else. Dude, that would be who had that on their play card, right?
Deion Sanders, probably the only one that had
Yeah.
Colorado getting a bye. Yeah, but we'll
It's
see. The
crazy.
Big 12 is really interesting as well. And now the ACC is up in the air because Miami lost. So
Right.
SMU, SMU is still undefeated in ACC play. So, who else would have predicted that? I think they were picked 7th in the ACC preseason poll. And
Yeah.
another team that's in their first year in a conference like Colorado in the Big 12. And, of course, you're looking at Oregon in the Big Ten right now for the first time, and they're first in the conference as well.
What a crazy football season, and it's far from over, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Backstrom, thank you once again for joining the Tim May Show, my man.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Cut. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. I'll see you.
Yeah, Matt, people can talk about covering games on baseball fields turned into football fields, but you've lived it. I wanted to ask you one quick thing about that that I didn't earlier. I remember covering the Browns and the Bengals, but I remember covering the Browns had a couple of games over a couple of years. One was at the Met, the old Metropolitan Stadium in Minneapolis, where both teams were on the same sideline.
Yeah.
And I also covered them one time when they played at Milwaukee County Stadium, where the Packers played like two, three games a year, back in the day, where both teams were on the same sideline. That was really odd. I think the two teams are going to be on opposite sidelines this time. I mean, the Northwestern has played there before at Wrigley Field, but I think the two teams are going to be on opposite sidelines now. But I can't remember. Jack Murphy, weren't y'all on opposite sidelines? I'm trying to
We
remember.
were. We
Yeah.
were. Yeah. Every baseball stadium I've ever played in is in opposite sidelines. And I think the one other thing that, will be a little bit different. And I think also for, Jim Knowles and Chip Kelly in the situation at Wrigley Field is having them maybe on that game day visit, get up and get in the box and see what angles they have down on the field. Because, yes, they're gonna, tweak or torque the field, to what's best for gameplay, also for TV cameras, for the fan experience, but then also like for the coaches. So the vantage point of being, maybe within the 40s, completely, having the full, east and west, north south view, whichever way the stadium runs, of it may be a little bit more angular. So they're gonna have to check that out too, which, could be something just slightly to overcome, playing in this venue.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ohio State's played it down at Miami. I forgot the name of the stadium now, but Miami Gardens is where it's
Hard
located.
Rock. Yep.
And that's where, the Miami Marlins, the baseball team played there for a long time until they built
Yep.
their own stadium downtown or near downtown. But, I'm just telling you my experience. When Ohio State played Alabama, for example, there in the 2020 National Championship game, the COVID year, the press box is not only in the corner where the baseball press box was, but it's low, so you couldn't
Yeah.
tell where they were.
Yeah.
There's more to that story than I'm not even gonna bring it up, but there's more to that story than even that. But it was very, very I don't know, difficult to figure out what was going on the field from a north from an I call it a north south standpoint, where the teams actually were on the field.
Right.
It was cool seeing the angles, I'll say that.
Sure.
And the spacings and stuff, but I never even thought about that, where the coaches' boxes will be. That I'll be checking that out myself when I get up there on Friday.
All right.
Last thing, I brought up a while ago about how competitive the Big Ten is, kind of top heavy competitive, right?
Yeah.
But still, you get two if you get four teams to the finish line with one loss each, that's remarkable. Has there been anything that's intrigued you about Indiana as we look sort of, I mean, obviously Northwestern is the is the game of the day as we record this. But has there been anything about Cincinnati that Indiana that's intrigued you from the standpoint of keeping on, keeping on? You understand what I mean?
Yeah,
This
of
wasn't,
course. I
this
yeah,
is no flash in
absolutely.
the pan.
Well, having played on an undefeated football season, undefeated football team before in an undefeated football season, there is a pressure that mounts at a certain juncture in the football season, you know, at 5-0, at 6-0, at 7-0, when everyone, and in some cases, maybe not, I'm not trying to say the players are doubting or the coaches are doubting, but they're like, you know, put a pin in the balloon and kind of pop, you know,
Yeah.
and like ruin the party. You know, you kind of sometimes, because like perfect seasons are just undefeated seasons are just so hard to come by that you just expect it somewhere deep down. You won't say it, but you feel like it. Like, is this the week? You
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
But here's one the intrigue about Indiana football is A, first of all, you've got, you know, Kurt Cignetti and who he is as a son of a coach who's been successful everywhere he's been. Brought a bunch of guys who've played together for multiple years from James Madison, some guys from the staff from James Madison. I think you look at Mike Shanahan, you know, and his and you know, and Cignetti going back to their time with Saban at Bama, so they
Yep.
know what like championship level football, Division I football looks like, what practice should look and feel like, what the meetings should feel like, what the off season should feel like. So they're implementing those strategies with their own personal twist. And then the way the season's gone on, you know, at that 5-0 mark or 6-0 mark, it was like, we talked about this as well. It's like it's big noon kickoff. They're getting like the Ohio State treatment, you know,
Yeah.
which rightfully so.
Yeah.
Big noon kickoff every single week, you know, college game day every other week. Big noon kickoff again against these, you know, these big games because they just continue to deliver. And I think where Indiana not only being undefeated is scary to a potential Ohio State football team, you know. Coming up after our Northwestern game is the undefeated's undefeated. I would say they're gonna be scary, rested off of a bye with some new looks, you know, maybe some new gadgets, some things that they're gonna be able to look into Ohio State's offense and defense to take advantage of, either protections or trick plays on offense, along with just being flat out good.
Yeah.
But I think the other gift, and again, I'm looking at it of Indiana as much as they've been in the show in the spotlight is as we look at Ohio State is, but going down early against Michigan State, you know, and then running off 45 straight, you know, I think that's the first time they trailed the whole season. You know, had they not trailed still, you'd just be like, ah, that's also another balloon that's going to pop really, really soon. And I would also say, you know, Cignetti and the coaches in their meetings this week is saying, what a gift having that Michigan game be a dogfight, you
Yeah.
know, of having you to play 60 minutes. And that's the one thing I'll say, even at the high school level, like when we get into some of these games, it's like forcing players to play games to the final tick on the clock, forcing coaches to make calls and game and manage a game to that final tick.
Yeah.
And in many cases, Indiana's not really been in that situation because they've been so dominant with a good schedule, not a great schedule. And I know that's been out there associated with where they rank. And
Right.
I'm just using that. I'm not saying that I'm not discounting them by any means, but like, but having it be a dogfight against a program like Michigan. Now, is it the Michigan of the last 2, 3, 4 years? Probably not. But that said, just checking a big box of winning a tough game against a tough team that wants to run the football and play great defense at home in front of your fans. You get the week off, and then you've got, you know, what should be a marquee matchup against Ohio State, which it rightfully is going to be.
Yeah. And I'm telling you what, fella, I covered a team in 2002 that you were the middle linebacker for that had so many close calls. It was ridiculous. Should have been a
Yeah.
movie. The name of the movie would have been Close Calls to a Championship. But the point is, you get backed into that corner and everybody's thinking, even media covering you are thinking, all right, this is the week. You know, been a nice run, but this is the week. That was last week for Indiana against Michigan.
Yes.
Michigan, you know, the defending national champion is going to summon whatever that is that goes with being a champion and knock off Cinderella. Didn't happen. And
Right.
you know, everybody was sitting there thinking whether if they're being honest, I'm talking about people watching the game. All right, it's been a nice run for Indiana. Man, what a start! But boy, they're going to be in a nice bowl game, you know.
But I'll tell you what, Tim, as I was watching it and following along is Michigan being the Michigan team that it is this year,
Yeah.
I was just waiting Like, it's great that it was a dogfight
I
and they
know what you're
overcame
fixing to
it,
say. I'm
but
sorry.
I was waiting for Indiana to just run away the way they had in, in every other game. Nebraska played them tough early, 40-something straight. I was just waiting for Indiana, that we've seen, to just run away, which I think would have been, a similar narrative that we'd be talking about Indiana, how great they are. I'd actually probably be a little bit more confident, in Indiana, had they just went and run away against a very good Michigan defense and a team that wants to run the football. But the gift for them was to have to make it a dogfight and play it down to that final tick, and either take that knee or get that stop, and the satisfaction that comes with that, and the alert that the coaches can say, that high alert, of overcoming adversity and seeing things through and finishing, that not every team has, and Indiana, frankly, hasn't been asked to do an awful lot.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I want to show an example one more time before we break here. Is on that what was this? Severs, was that the field goal kicker for Miami back
Yes.
in? Yeah, show him the finger you got on that ball.
Oh, I think it was this one right
Yeah,
here.
yeah. And if you'd gotten two on it, it would have been no
Yes.
good, and Ohio
Yes.
State would have won in regulation. Sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, it comes down to that,
Yes.
and
We were a team for drama.
yes, y'all were. But my point is, you found a way to win the game,
Yes.
despite that. And so that's what it, you think this is just like rolling helmets out there and these games will be decided. College football, like you took pointed out a while ago, Matt, college football has never been more entertaining. I mean,
Well,
across the board, because
and not only
everybody's
that,
got
Tim,
players, right?
you just made the point. You just kind of took is because of the transfer portal, like if you have some type of NIL collective and you are have a mindset to want to play in the transfer portal, and now that's not for everybody, and not everybody's doing it, at least year over year, everyone's got players, and that's why I also say, even just going backwards for a hot second, like Purdue can only be so bad for so long before some of their alumni and whomever business owners in that that West Lafayette area gets get angry and pissed off and start forking out some change for them to go out and buy victories.
Yeah.
It's I mean the NFL wants parity. That's why the draft's constructed the way it is. Why there's a salary cap. Why there's free agency and all these other things. And right now it's going to be hard to stay bad in college football. And I think it's also why, to go back to our point about Indiana, them being undefeated is so special and so unique.
Yeah.
And Oregon as well. But like, it's hard to have to go do it every week against high quality opponents. And so to come out with those victories, it means a lot.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm. I'm Tim May. This is the Tim May Show. I'm going to wrap it up really quickly now, Matt, because we've been talking for way too long about anything other than the Northwestern game. But that's okay. We'll be back next week. Matt Wilhelm, the star of the show, Tim May, the producer, director, chief bottle washer. But until next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you then.